3D mirror symmetry and not homology. Okay, yeah, it's always awesome to be here. So I want to talk about some work, part of which should appear soon, with Justin and my student Nick Garner and Alexia Blomkoff and Lev Rozanski. So the idea here was to use some mathematical notions we've been developing to describe topological twists of 3D n equals 4 theories and operators and Hilbert spaces therein, to try to apply some of these things to constructions of Homfli, not homology. So the starting point, or the connection with not homology, came from work of Lev and Alexis. So they have a B-type construction involving matrix factorizations that conjecturally computes Homfli homology. And really, at least as far as Lev's history with this construction goes, like, this was physical to begin with. His motivation was in part sort of the conifold construction of Ogury-Vafa that then Gukhoff-Schwarz-Vafa used to produce Homfli homology. In a field theory version of this construction, Lev started out with Gukhoff-Witten surface operators in 4D Yang-Mills and reduced on a circle and got certain boundary conditions for 3D n equals 4 theories, and then took a B-twist of that. And I'll explain exactly how knots and braids are included in the construction, but ultimately Lev had a thing that involved 3D n equals 4 theories with boundary conditions and a B-twist. And this was something that he knew how to handle very well, at least in the case of sigma models, because he and Anton Kapustin and Natalia Salina sort of wrote the first major paper on how two categories of boundary conditions in 3D n equals 4 theories should work. This is some years ago. So what the new things that we brought to the table were, on one hand, gauge theories, and on the other hand, 3D mirror symmetry. So the question we asked was, well, this B-type construction isn't really a sigma model. It comes from a gauge theory, and that gauge theory has a well-known 3D mirror. So can we just take their construction of knot homology and pull it through 3D mirror symmetry and get something interesting on the A side? And with Justin and Nick and Phil and others, we've been figuring out how to do computations on the A side effectively. And so the answer is yes, you can take the Oblomkov-Rozanski construction, pull it through mirror symmetry, and get something new and exciting on the A side. Sort of new and exciting. So the most basic computations you do there actually land you, well, for algebraic knots, actually connect you to yet another mathematical construction of knot homology using affine Springer fibers that I'll discuss later. But that's for algebraic knots, and there's quite a lot to do for other knots. I'll explain. So talk today. I want to start out with explaining how knots and braids get encoded, first in two-dimensional physics, just as sort of an overview to get us all on the same page. And then I'll get to three-dimensional theories, say how the Oblomkov-Rozanski construction appears in 3D theories, and then apply mirror symmetry. As a stepping stone, to talk about something concrete, I want to consider the 2DB model to T star of the flag manifold for SLN, where here I mean SLNC mod Borel. So this is 2D. Really, I'm thinking of this as a 2D physical n equals 2 comma 2 sigma model with a B twist. And I really want to say to think of the physical theory first, because T star flag in the physical theory depends on really it's n minus 1 Fi parameters or complexified Kähler parameters. Fi parameters is what you get in the GLSM description of that. I'll write them as T1 through Tn up to an overall shift. That is a vector. To encode a braid in this theory, we can think of these complex parameters as positions of braid strands. So positions of n strands, little n strands of a braid. Let me draw it. How to do this? So draw the braid like this. So here's T1, T2. And as we travel along the braid in some direction theta, the TIs, the positions of the strands, start to move, and a braid starts to form. So in a slice of the braid at time theta, there are n complex parameters that tell us where the strands lie. That this picture of sort of a braid evolving in theta can be translated physically to a two-dimensional theory on our theta, which I'll think of as space. Everything is Euclidean, but so we have space and time, and so that's theta. This is time. And in the two-dimensional theory, I can encode the braid just by taking the Fi parameters or the Kähler parameters and varying them through space.
So is it the B model, the same 2D theory?
So it's the B twist of a physical 2,2 theory. And now, why do I see the B twist? Like, this makes sense in the physical theory, but one thing I would want is that if we wiggle the braid a little bit, we want this variation to be Q exact. Or basically, we want the B model to be insensitive to it locally. And this is what happens. So the B model locally doesn't depend on Kähler parameters. And in mathematical algebraic descriptions of the B model, you don't even say the word Kähler parameter. You say like stability chamber or resolution. And so this is a braiding of resolution parameters, stability parameters, in the mathematical notion of the B model. If you actually want to do this mathematically, as far as I know, it doesn't make sense to consider continuous deformation. But instead, so in algebraic geometry, you can do the following thing instead. Instead of sort of a smooth continuous variation, you can let the parameters be constant for most of the time. And then jump very quickly in infinitesimal bits of space. And that's going to correspond to a picture where we have interfaces at well-localized points in space. And mathematically, what are these interfaces? So here's I sigma, here's I sigma prime, labeled by some braid group elements. These I sigmas are objects in the category of interfaces, which is the same as boundary conditions for two copies of the theory, which in the B model is derived coherent sheaves on T star flag times T star flag. And this sort of braid action has been identified mathematically. And the work that I know it from did a bit more than this. So this shows up in work of Kautis, Chemnitzer, and Licata, also related to knot homology. I suspect, so they categorify quantum group actions. I think just the Weyl group may have appeared elsewhere, and I don't actually know the first place, but.
What's your question?
So, right, sorry. So let me actually say what you get from this. So we will find a representation. So we'll find a representation of the braid group on n strands in this category of interfaces in the B model to the flag variety. And these interfaces are some, there's some objects in here that have actually been identified in this case. I should say, the category of interfaces has an obvious monoidal structure. In physics, it's just because interfaces can be collided. So int is a monoidal category. And it's obvious from this geometric description. This comes from convolution. It's coherent sheaves on space times itself, and then there's a convolution product, which involves three copies of that space and various maps down to two copies.
You started your story by saying, like, I have this theory that depends on this granted C-vec.
Yeah.
You said, I'll just consider a theory with a sort of background field C-vec of theta varying in space. Was there a reason you decided to make a constant in the time direction? Like, you didn't have to.
I did not have to. So what's useful, well, first, varying in a single direction gives me a representation of the braid group and interfaces. And the other nice thing that comes out of this, which is desirable for knot homology applications, is that if we now close up space and make it an S1, So if we close up the braid. Sorry. Then we get a picture like this, where there are interfaces or some variation of FI parameters around a circle. And now what's associated to this is a vector space. So you can ask for the Hilbert space on circle with interfaces times time. You could also write that as Hilb. It's the Hilbert space of a theory on a circle with decorations. This in the B model is some DG vector space, which should be an invariant of the braid closure. And so this does not necessarily give you not invariance. This gives you invariance of braids in R2 times S1.
So the answer to my question then is that, like, I still want this to be time invariant for this quantity.
So that you can define a Hilbert space, yes. And the other thing that I should have said is why overcrossings and undercrossings are different. The B model is constant, is locally constant as a function of FI parameters, unless you set them equal to each other, which means that some cycle in T star flag collapses. And that is then a different B model. So everything is nice and locally constant as long as the TIs are separated. Physically, physically, we know from an old paper of Witten's about phases of n=2 theories that you can go around singular points. One way or another, but it does actually matter how you go, and you just have to avoid the point where fi plus theta is zero. So maybe another thing to say is that so I described this very abstractly. In theory, one should be able to write down the Hilbert space, but it's actually not hard to compute. If you know the category of interfaces, you can write this down. And a nice way to do it is by state operator correspondence. For the record, if I wanted to compute this, I would map that Hilbert space to local operators at a point in the plane with a bunch of braiding interfaces going radially around it. So I'm taking the cylinder and flattening it out. And so now my Hilbert space has become local operators. But everything's topological. And so this picture with braiding interfaces going around radially can actually be deformed so that all the braiding is happening at once. So here's the braid. And local operators here between all the braid happening at once and nothing happening is a Hom. So now this is Hom in the category of interfaces between the tensor product of all of the interfaces corresponding to the braid, and the the trivial interface or identity operator for the tensor product or coherent sheaf on the diagonal inside T star flag times T star flag. And there should probably be a serif functor somewhere in there to make it all work out. And so that's how taking the trace works in an explicit formula. Okay. Now, I'm going to go back to Oblomkov and Rozansky. So like I said, they were motivated by constructions of Gukhov-Witten, who described what I just described, but did it on a surface operator coupled to a 4D theory. Actually, I should also say, these sorts of pictures were used in particular by Kautis-Kamnitzer and Kautis-Kamnitzer-Lukata to get Kovanov homology or Kovanov-Rozansky homology. That means categorifications of Jones or analogous polynomials for fixed group and fixed representations. What you get from throwing in a 3D or 4D bulk is a categorification of Homply, which includes all ranks at once. So this sort of thing in two dimensions leads us to categorification of Jones. Want Homply. And claim is that this comes from adding a bulk. Let me just give you the three-dimensional version of Oblomkov-Rozansky. As reinterpreted in physics. So instead of that cylinder that was empty, they look at a cylinder that's now solid. And in the bulk, we have a 3D n equals 4 gauge theory So it's a quiver gauge theory given by the ADHM quiver, which looks, if resolved, like a sigma model to the Hilbert scheme of n points on C2. And everything's going to be in the B twist in 3D. And it is actually going to be resolved. So effectively, the bulk looks like a sigma model to the Hilbert scheme. Now, in addition to this 3D bulk, there's a boundary condition. And the boundary condition is interesting.
Sorry, what is B twist here? Is that Rozansky-Witten twist?
Yeah, it's the Rozansky-Witten twist. I've gotten used to calling things A and B. It's not standard standard language, but it should be. I mean, Lev calls it the B twist too. Okay.
Yeah, because probably he doesn't be like calling it Rozansky.
My twist with Edward. Okay, let me draw that picture again over here. Sorry, there are many good reasons for calling it the B twist. One, mathematically, it's described in terms of algebraic geometry, like the two-dimensional B twist, rather than analytic or symplectic geometry. Also, circle compactification of the 3D B twist gives you a two-dimensional B twist. boundary conditions for the 3D theory and the B-twist come from two-dimensional 2, 2 B-twisted theories. And finally, you can view a B-twisted 3D theory as a boundary condition for four-dimensional B-twisted, in the sense of Langlands, super Yang-mills. So like the Bs go up and down in dimension all the way, and as do the As. Okay. So here's my theta. Just going to redraw. So here we have effectively a sigma model to Hilbert C2. And it's coupled on the boundary to a horrendous boundary condition that contains T star flag. What do I actually mean by that? In the sigma model description, where we have a gauge group UN in the bulk, where so T star flag has a UN flavor symmetry that's gauged in coupling to the bulk. Moreover, you have to do something with chiral operators on the boundary and relating them to restrictions of hypermultiplet operators in the bulk. It effectively, so there are some fields here. X, Y in GLN in the adjoint, and their fields, hypermultiplet fields, canonically called I and J in the fundamental representation and its dual. And what the boundary condition actually does is set I to 0, and it sets X to the complex moment map on the flag variety. Complex moment map is a chiral operator on the boundary. So it goes from T star flag to GLN, possibly dualized. Okay.
So the boundary condition still has a UN outside. Do you know any MTU or MTU interpretation of the boundary condition?
Yes. So this is the T of G boundary condition, right? I don't know an M theory interpretation.
Because if the bulk theory now, it's intuitive and true bias, right?
Totally. So this is all related to the conifold construction. I think it's more naturally related on the A side, maybe? If anyone wants to know about the conifolds and how this is related, let me talk about it at the end.
Okay.
Yeah.
You might imagine following Witten's work, it might be related to the M2M5.
It should be. Okay. No. It totally should be.
So the third parameters will be some other positions than five.
Yeah. It was the positions of the M. Yeah. Sorry. Yes. So I'll say it here. So what we expect. So there's a resolved conifold picture that involves a Lagrangian M5 that's sitting on a knot that's maybe turned into a tight braid that's wound around many times. And M2's ending on this M5. And this is the theory on the world volume of M2's once we've gone down to type 2A. And if there's a single knot that's been turned into a braid, this M2 has to wind around as many times as there are strands of the braid, and so there are n of them, and that's why the gauge group here is un, depending on the number of strands of the braid.
Do you happen to know which module is associated to the last letters?
Okay. It's the knot homology, literally. So the Higgs branch algebra is Cherednik, is spherical Cherednik, that acts on some really complicated module. That's the knot homology. That's the bottom row of Homfli homology. And it's nasty. Like so you can build it, and Lev and Alexei on one hand have been constructing these sheaves on the Hilbert scheme. Eugene Gorski, Rasmussen, Negutz have been constructing the same sheaves with circle bimodules, but it's not an easy construction. They do it by tensoring together a bunch of boundary interfaces and producing indirectly a sheaf on the Hilbert scheme. And knot homology is interesting and complicated. I can tell you much more easily on the A side what it is, which is one of my points. The A side is much prettier than this. So we have interfaces on the boundary that encode the braid. They're boundary FI parameters. So we're going to braid boundary FIs, or boundary Kähler parameters. And there's a final ingredient, which is a line operator that goes into here. That's a Wilson line in the kth tensor power of the fundamental representation. And the claim is that the Hilbert space on this entire thing, so we have a disk with a braid going around the outside and a Wilson line in the center. So this is conjecture. The a to the k row of Homfli PT homology. Of the braid closure. And as I said before, it's obvious that when you do this, when you go all the way around, you'll get an invariant of braid closures. It's not obvious that you're going to get an invariant of knots. And you have to check Markov too, that you can pull braid strands off through the center. And they have checked it. And so they have proved that you get a knot invariant. I think the conjecture is that this is actually Homfli PT homology. I should say, so how on earth do you compute such a thing? The category of interfaces here, computation. It's done in int, which is the category of boundary interfaces. Which schematically, as a geometric thing, is coherent sheaves. Well, it looks like it's coherent sheaves on T star flag times T star flag again. Except now it's fibered over the Hilbert scheme, where the map from T star flag to the Hilbert scheme is induced from this boundary coupling. I can say explicitly what it is later, but it's not super important.
Can I say what is the map?
works.
Yeah. So so T star flag has a complex moment map, and the eigenvalues of that moment map are the like the x positions of points in the Hilbert scheme, and the y positions are set to zero.
GLF.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah. So that.
But I think, yeah. So saying my, sorry, that's the, yes. But locally, it's still induced from that.
But what I mean, it's just the Hilbert scheme has dimension 2n, right? T star flag has like the moment map is by rational. Moment map doesn't reduce, so at some point reduce the dimension.
Sorry, so let me first think about it more carefully after the talk. I need to actually try to translate. I thought it was straightforward. Maybe it's not quite. I need to translate that boundary coupling into what this does. What you expect to get is a map to a Lagrangian. Like in the nicest case, this would be a map to a Lagrangian inside Hilbert. And it's a Lagrangian that's clearly sitting on the resolved locus inside Hilbert.
Can I say what it is for an angle to 2?
I mean, no, I would have to spend 5 minutes, and I don't want to do it now. But in yeah, so the thing I can say is that in terms of algebraic functions, which is going to be boring, and so in terms of algebraic functions, what this is doing is setting the thing whose eigenvalues are the x-coordinates of points in the Hilbert scheme equal to the moment map on T star flag. And as you say, yes, the eigenvalues of this thing are all zero. So what are points in the Hilbert scheme? It's roughly they're symmetrized tuples of points in C2.
You only care about functions.
Exactly. And so what this map does at the level of functions is to set the x coordinates to be the eigenvalues of the moment map, and it sets the y coordinates to be zero. And so it looks a little trivial at the level of functions because it's all mapping to it's mapping to the compact locus, and maybe not.
Tutor is like also like you're supposed to be mapping out by G's on the flags.
I am. This is all G invariant.
But I'm saying that you've modded out on the Hilbert scheme, so you have to like the thing that's natural is you have a map from T star flag. Into GLN
so,
mod G.
Yes.
GLN, and then you do T star flag mod GLN.
Yeah. Sorry. So the way I should have said this is that this is fibered over the stack. Yes. I absolutely do.
Do you really mean set y equals zero and not like take the correspondence where
yes, no, I want to build a generating function on the stack and look at the graph of that generating function. I don't want to do it now. I want to talk about the A side, there should be a cleaner description of this, and I think it's not hard to access. I wanted to write something schematic down, but you guys are all correct. The schematic thing is not entirely right. So what you should be doing is quotienting by diagonal G. It's fibered over the stack. It's fibered over T star GLN times C to the N mod GLN. And
you can't just mod the bottom, you have to mod everything.
Yeah, so I don't know exactly how to write it, but it's a diagonal action on everything.
Yeah.
Okay. I mean, no, but it obviously exists because there's a coupling between this bulk theory and the boundary condition. So we just need to work out what it is.
You describe the map of functions, and well, in other words, you describe the map between the underlying, I mean, both T star flag and the characteristic of their resolution of some finite varieties. So it is so the kind of rationalized market as finite varieties. So you describe the map between as finite varieties, and therefore by rational map between T star flag and Hilbert scheme. I don't believe that this sounds correct.
I think I very likely oversimplified. So, yeah.
To that portion, that quiver portion.
Okay.
But do we agree that there's no map from T star flag to the Hilbert scheme?
Do we need to?
We're just not going to. So I'll work it out. I don't know.
They just wrote this formula. Let's get here.
Yeah, so it's right. So the thing that ought to be true is that the category of interfaces given a certain boundary condition is that boundary condition times itself fibered over the bulk gauge theory. If the gauge theory and the bulk were pure G gauge theory, then I would have just said you take the boundary target times itself diagonal quotient by G. And this is an enhancement of that, where in addition to the diagonal quotient by G, we have to fiber over this affine space before we took the G quotient. So it's fibered over T star GLN mod C to the N, and it's all quotiented by GLN. I think this is what Justin was trying to say.
How does it map to T star GLN? I mean, I understand T star GLN, and I understand this in blue from the two moment maps.
Mm-hmm.
Was it map to CM?
Zero.
In zero.
Zero.
Yeah.
Do you need physical intuition of why this setup allows the bait to close, to slip through the, you know? So you said this.
I have no idea. I really have no idea. It's not obvious to me.
Okay.
It's clear in the conifold picture, but no, from the gauge theory, I don't see it at all.
Okay.
Say one other thing. So Lev and Alexei did not use this geometric description. They took this and turned it into GLSM, at least from the point of view of the Hilbert scheme. I guess you kind of have to. And reduced this, simplified this to matrix factorizations on a certain space. And so they work in a matrix factorization category that has a nice tensor product. And that's the thing you actually see in their papers. Okay. So let me try to say a bit about the 3D mirror.
If you really want to write that down properly, just drop the T-stock on the bottom. It's all okay.
Really?
Yeah.
Not sure I do.
Yeah, the question is that, what is the explicit? I mean, T-stock flex has a moment now to G, and the question is whether you want to have, a protocol of those things, you have two such things. Do you want to, like the difference?
No, and
yeah,
I think it's okay. Thanks.
Just so you know, we're not thinking about it again. If the talking.
Yes. Cool. Yeah, sorry. I really should have written that down properly. I decided to be super schematic and okay. So, right, so what does the 3D mirror look like? We can take every single object in that theory and find its mirror. So the 3D bulk is famously self-mirror. But now the Coulomb branch is the Hilbert scheme. The Higgs branch is also the Hilbert scheme, but the relevant Hilbert scheme is the Coulomb branch, the one that's related to that. So just for the record, so this is spec of the algebra of local operators in the A twist, where A is given by the BFN construction. A is some version of cohomology, Borel-Mohr homology in the BFN construction of maps from disk, union disk over punctured disk to GLN times C to the N mod GLN to that stack. Physically, you would say the Coulomb branch operators involve monopole operators and polynomials and some adjoint scalar. And it's the monopole operators that parameterize the Hilbert scheme. So the Hilbert scheme, in terms of functions, looks like coordinates of the symmetric product of a bunch of points in C2. These are positive and negative monopole operators. So these are monopole ops of fundamental weight for UN plus minus. The B twist maps to an A twist, which is the thing that's been better understood in recent years. This is why local operators are Coulomb branch things. The line operator in the kth antisymmetric power of C to the N can be analyzed by a brain construction that appeared in work of Essel and Gomez and becomes a vortex line. That it has a brain construction and a quiver description. I'm going to give you the geometric implication of this. So in the A-twist, if we take a horizontal slice through the cylinder, so on a slice, the hypermultiplet fields, things I was calling x and y and I and j, behave holomorphically. And vortex lines look like singularities at a point in this transverse plane. And the vortex line mirror to that Wilson line through a direct calculation starting from Jaume's brain construction ends up describing a certain singularity, a mirror-morphic singularity in X and Y and I and J that looks like this. So I and J are regular. X has to have a form like this. We take, so X is an N by N matrix, and we take a block of size K and N minus K and require everything inside this block to be divisible by z. So x has a first order pole inside a block and is regular otherwise. Y does the complementary thing. So we take a block of size k and n minus k on the other side, and y is allowed to have a first order pole inside the block and is regular otherwise. And the gauge group is broken. So the gauge group near the origin is, if we complexify, it's GLN taking values in Taylor series, informal Taylor series in Z, infinitesimally close to the origin. And this gets broken by the vortex line to an appropriate parahoric subgroup. So it's broken to some parahoric PK, which looks like X. So it's matrices valued in formal Taylor series that have this form. There's an upper block that has to be divisible by Z.
This looks an awful lot like coupling to quantum mechanics on a fly, right?
Totally. This is coupling, right. So that's the other way to say it. So maybe physically, the better way to describe this vertex operator, this vortex line operator, we're coupling to T star Grassmannian of K planes in N space n equals to quantum mechanics. On the line. So we can introduce a one-dimensional sigma model and couple the bulk theory to it by gauging. Again, this has, depending on how you look at it, a real UN symmetry or a complex GLN symmetry, and we're just going to gauge that in coupling to the bulk.
And also fully coupled to hypermodulus.
Absolutely. So there's a superpotential, and the superpotential induces the pole here, the pole here and the zero here. Indeed.
Sorry, do you want the T star?
Huh?
Do you want the T star?
I do, actually.
Otherwise, you couldn't play.
So, and so the two-dimensional quiver ends up looking, in n equals two terms, it ends up looking like this, with a superpotential, with a 1D superpotential. That's PQ, P phi Q in the correct order. And the coupling to the bulk, which goes the other way. But yes. Yeah, so it's X restricted to the line. So it's the bulk hypermult restricted to Z equals zero times QP. That's it.
You need the phi?
I do actually need the phi. And I can, I think I can tell you where it comes from in the brain construction, but you absolutely do.
I forget those one thing you did for symmetric.
Yeah, so this puzzled me for a little bit. So naively, for anti-symmetric powers, you would not have the phi, but you also would not have the superpotential. For symmetric powers, you would have the phi, but you wouldn't have the superpotential.
Yes.
But this is all happening, so in the brain construction of this theory, we have a cyclic quiver, and the phi comes from from the fact that there's a circle around and there's a string stretched around that circle. And you get a superpotential. So the thing you want to avoid when it's anti-symmetric powers, you don't want Q phi to the LP to be independent operators. And they're not independent operators. They're killed by that superpotential. And so it's fine. Also, there are many checks that we've done later that this actually works.
If you were to erase the one, the whole setup would have excess supersymmetry, perhaps, or something like that.
Yeah, exactly. And yes, absolutely. And the one is coming from some D6 brain that's just there and not doing much else. OK. So that's the bulk. Bulk is A-twisted. This is the line operator. What happens to the boundary condition? It becomes something so much nicer. So the boundary condition is pure Dirichlet. It sets J to be a vector of ones, and it sets X to have eigenvalues completely. It sets X to have eigenvalues equal to the FI parameters.
This is the answer to what question?
This is the dual. This is the mirror of the T star flag boundary condition. So in this case, there's nothing else living at the boundary. This is just a Lagrangian. So this is a Lagrangian in GLn times c to the n, and we can push it down to a Lagrangian in the stack. In T star, sorry. Yes, so I'm telling you locally what happens. So this is in a little sliver. This is the mirror of the boundary condition.
Okay.
And now if we want to encode a non-trivial braid, we had better start varying these.
Okay, but let me say, so it takes the TIs and then it finds some Lagrangian, and what is Lagrangian?
It's
defined
Lagrangian.
I am J arbitrary, and X, J are fixed.
Oh, sorry, I should have called it I. So J and Y are free.
Okay.
Yeah?
But you want Lagrangian because T star J and epsilon, or that inclusion by?
Both, but one gives you the other. So symplectic quotient is a Lagrangian correspondence. So if you want to make it equivariant, you can smear it, but that gets undone when you do the quotient anyway. So perhaps you would be more comfortable if I said that it was the G orbit of this, and that's equivalent. One important feature of this is that precisely when the eigenvalues are distinct, the stabilizer, so note, the stabilizer of any point like this in T star GLn times C to the N is trivial. Which is important. And so we're allowed locally in the A twist, these parameters are not important. Just like in the B-twist, we were allowed to vary Kähler parameters. These are complex masses or complex structure parameters in the A-twist. Locally, they're not important as long as nothing jumps discontinuously. And we will get a discontinuous jump when this stabilizer becomes bigger. And so we're allowed to have arbitrary eigenvalues as long as they're distinct. Cool. And so finally, there's a computation. So we've translated everything to the A side. And the question is for now, given a braid or a knot, how do we actually compute that knot homology? And the answer is easy for a particular class of knots. So there's an easy computation of the Hilbert space on disk with braid and vortex line for algebraic knots, expressed as braids with positive twist. Try to explain what that means. But so what do I mean by algebraic knots? So we will take, so suppose we fix now x of z to be some element gamma of z in GLn over polynomials in z, such that the eigenvalues of of gamma at e to the I theta sweep out a braid. So sweep out a braid closure. That may be super abstract. So let me give you an example. If I want to produce the trefoil this way, so at n equals 2, I can consider gamma of z to be, say, the matrix 1, z cubed. The eigenvalues of this are z to the 3 halves and minus z to the 3 halves. And if we restrict those to the unit circle and ask what happens as you move theta around from 0 to 2 pi, we'll find two strands of a braid that do that. And then we close. And precisely because there's a branch cut in the eigenvalues, after we close, we just get a single knot, a single component knot. So this gives the closure of this represents the trefoil. Another important piece of data here is the spectral curve. So one can, given such an algebraic knot, one can consider the determinant of this gamma minus W times the identity. So this is an algebraic curve. It depends on two variables, Z and W. It's an algebraic curve inside C2, coordinates C and W. And there's another standard thing that one does with plane curve singularities. You intersect with S3 inside C2, and the intersection of the spectral curve with S3 also gives you the knot back. It's another way to do it. That's maybe a more standard construction.
C2?
No. No, it's not. Yeah. Okay. Sorry. So yeah, I know. Let me say the following. So given a polynomial matrix, there are two ways to associate a knot to it, and they're equivalent. One way is to compute the spectral curve and intersect with S3. the other way is to look at the eigenvalues as they wind around. So first, let me just make that statement. Given a polynomial matrix whose eigenvalues are always distinct, we can associate that to one of these braid closures. As yes, and the thing I actually want is on the unit circle, but yes, I don't want these to ever collide. But yes, so as a function for any z, the eigenvalues have to be distinct.
Not equal to zero.
So given such a thing, first this represents a knot. And that then can be translated into a boundary condition.
As you move in the unit circle, it's a braid.
So you choose an ordering, and then you follow that around.
It's not where.
It's the closure of a braid.
Closure. So it's a design free.
It's an R2 times S1. And so gamma of z defines a wrapped boundary condition. Or a boundary condition on which these t parameters are continuously varying. It says that x, you can do it in two different ways. So either on the unit circle, you say that x at z equals 1 is x on the unit circle is equal to gamma, and I is just constant. I does nothing. Or I'm actually going to do the computation in a state operator correspondence. So if we apply a state operator correspondence to that 3D picture, it'll turn into something like this. So the Hilbert space on that cylinder will become the space of local operators on a boundary where the braiding is happening as we sweep around this point on the boundary. And there's a vortex line coming in from the middle. And the computation of local operators here is the thing we've learned how to do really well. So now we can take that cylindrical boundary condition and turn it into a boundary condition that literally sets x at the boundary equal to gamma of z, the holomorphic thing. And what are local operators here? So this Hilbert space. Appears as cohomology of something. Let me tell you what goes in there. For the case where there's no vortex line, we consider the map from GLN. There's a geometric way to say this, which is just take maps from the formal disk into adjoint times fundamental mod. I think I actually want t star. If I'm very careful about it, I do want t star, but it's going to go away in a second. Mod GLN, satisfying the boundary condition, and with a singularity. corresponding to the vortex line at z equals 0. So that's what you have to spell out. And that's not a difficult thing to spell out. It just requires unpacking. And satisfying the boundary condition on a punctured disk. In other words, you can do a state operator correspondence where you surround the point where you want to compute local operators with a disk that is effectively identified almost everywhere with the boundary except this point at the origin. Kevin is nodding his head. This is a thing I learned to compute partially from you. And it's a thing we've been computing in many different cases. So now, if we spell that out, that turns into cohomology of an affine Springer fiber. Algebraically, this thing is the following. You consider the map from the algebraic loop group, GLN over Laurent series, times the representation. In this case, it's the Lie algebra times C to the N over Taylor series to the Lie algebra times representation over Laurent series, called this pi. Then we can take the inverse image of gamma of z1 and quotient by GLN of Taylor series. This thing looks horrible. It is actually not. So the claim is that the Hilbert space is the cohomology of that. Because it's a Dirichlet boundary condition that fully breaks the gauge symmetry, this action is free. And moreover, the space breaks up into a disjoint union of infinitely many components labeled by vortex number or algebraically by degree. It's the determinant of this GLN of Z transformation. So this is actually a direct sum over degree of cohomology of blah, blah, blah in degree D. That's Q degree. So one ends up with a Hilbert space that has a grading, which is Q degree and not homology.
So
yes.
Q degree
is degree. So it's the degree of the determinant.
Okay.
So there's some element g of z here.
Okay.
So this has to do with the fact that we're doing g and not SLM.
Absolutely. Yes. And where constructions like this have appeared in not homology before, folks used SLN, that complicates things and it makes it really hard to see Q degree. Here, GLN just came out from mirror symmetry and it makes it really easy to see Q degree. Homological degree is homological degree. And there's a modification of this where we throw in a vortex line where we just modify the space a little bit to require X and Y not to be formal Taylor series, but rather to have this form. In particular, we require X to have this form. It's only X that ends up mattering. And we quotient not by Taylor series loops, but by this paraheuric. And so there's a corresponding thing.
And gamma here is anything which is any matrix which only in a circle and has distinct eigenvectors. That's the only assumption.
That's the assumption. And I think a unit circle is not really a it's not really an invariant thing. But yeah.
Every component of this thing is still pretty
Yes.
Which is okay.
So.
Even in every degree, this cohomology can be in dimension. For fixed D, it cannot be that for.
No, it's not. So.
I mean, if these are your assumptions in gamma, then this cannot.
These are finite dimensional. At fixed degree, the components are finite dimensional. So I made my student actually compute these. And he got together with Eugene Gorsky's student, who was computing something very different. And they realized that their spaces were the same. So in fact, the degree D component of this. So degree D is the Hilbert scheme of D points on the spectral curve. Yes. It's because of the Cn. Otherwise, it would be infinite. And it's totally messy to split up. But it's the having that fundamental representation really helps.
Yes. So it's not really the affine Springer fiber.
It's not the standard affine Springer fiber, no. It's a slight modification of that construction. Right, so you get the Hilbert scheme of D points on a singular plane curve. And the cohomology of this was conjectured by Gorsky, Oblomkov.
Rasmussen and Schende.
Absolutely, Rasmussen and Schende, to be Homfli homology. This is in degree zero. There's a modification for other k. Sorry, this is for a degree zero. There's a modification for vortex lines.
So the curve is like, it's an outline curve, so you know, back to back, so it's the way it's
written. Mm-hmm. And so this is due to Garner, my student, and Oskar Kivinen, Eugene's former student.
So this, one side of the equation depends on n, and the other side doesn't. Does it? I don't know.
Gamma.
They both.
Yeah, the curve gamma has to
do with n. Yeah, sorry.
Yeah. Okay. So finally, I'm going to.
By GLN, it's GLN square bracket Z.
Is.
You just lost your.
Oh, I'm so sorry. Yeah, it's GLN Taylor series. So this is at k equals zero, and there's a modification for singularities. Let me say two things to wrap up, and then I am happy to keep discussing. First, I threw in a hidden caveat in here that things were positively twisted. So I could consider the other handed trefoil by throwing in z to the minus 3. And if I do this computation naively for negative twists, like that, I get an empty moduli space. There are no solutions on the disk that satisfy the boundary condition. And that's actually fine. What's missing is that on the B side, we actually had to resolve the Hilbert scheme. On the A side, we have to throw in mass parameters, which induce there's some bulk mass parameters which induce a flow on. Anyway, with Justin in previous work on symplectic duality, we had to consider mass parameters and Jacquet functors, and things related to turning on flows in a category. It looks like if you do that, then everything works out just fine for negative twists as well, but there's something tricky happening. The other comment is that this is all well and good for algebraic knots, and it gives us confidence that something works. What do we do for all knots? In particular, can we get a braid group representation in the category of interfaces? And there is optimism. In general, this category of interfaces in the A-twist is horrendous. It is going to look like the Foucaille category of maps from an interval into your bulk target, satisfying the boundary conditions. It's the Foucaille category of a path space, which is horrendous. Here, because of the form of the boundary condition, it looks like things can be simplified. So the simplification leads to a conjecture that the category of interfaces in the A-twist will look like a Foucaille-Seidel category on a copy of GLN, not loops, just GLN, times Lie algebra times fundamental representation. I need to give you some super potential. But first, what I mean by this, these are complex varieties. I'm thinking of them as Kähler manifolds. So it's Foucaille in a real with a real symplectic form on that space. To describe the superpotential, I should put some coordinates on this, which I'll call G. And here it's actually the duals to X and I, that Y and J that show up. And an interface depends on the two boundary conditions it's connecting. And so on both sides of the interface, I'm going to set X to be some matrix with eigenvalues lambda, and I to be a constant matrix. It's the same on the other side, and I want to know how to get from one to the other. And that leads me to a model like this. The superpotential, it ends up looking like trace of lambda, that matrix. Minus its G conjugate.
You didn't have to the same number to choose size.
I did not have to. No, I didn't. But it's simplest. I can always use the gauge action to rotate. Oh, no, sorry, I can't choose the eigenvalues. I don't need to have the same lambda on the two sides.
The same one of these two matrices.
Totally.
Okay.
It looks like this. And then there's a G minus one. It's J, G minus one, vector of ones. And there's a deformation. There's a deformation that looks like, sort of like it has to do with wrapping, wrapping in some three-dimensional sense. So this depends on some extra parameter. Also, and the claim is that this has the right properties to be this category of interfaces. In particular, in a Foucaille-Seidel category, you expect the objects to be labeled. You expect a generating set of objects to be thimbles that are labeled by critical points. And okay, this doesn't look particularly transparent, but the critical points turn out to be labeled by elements of the Weyl group. The locus where dw is zero is precisely where lambda that matrix, sorry, not lambda, G, is in the file group for GLN. And J is zero and Y is something fixed. These are in one-to-one correspondence with elements of the vowel group, which is actually is the right thing. These should be all the positive twists. And there's an order that roughly corresponds to length in the vowel group. There's a partial order, and we are in the process of actually computing interesting HOMs. And moreover, there's a convolution product on this thing that seems to correspond to composing braid generators. So it looks like there's something cool in the category of interfaces, but it's going to be non-trivial.
It should have like a trace functor.
Sorry?
It should have a trace functor.
Totally. Yes.
Yeah. On that note, I mean, if you take the identity line, can you do this endomorphisms and match it with the boundary operators that you already know?
I think so, but I'm ashamed to say I haven't worked fully through that. So the endomorphisms of the identity are actually going to be infinite. The Q degree on this side should come from wrapping. This in particular, this space has pi 1. And so there's some extra grading here that comes from taking the from passing to the universal cover. And it sort of looks correct, but I haven't gotten to the end of it. Yeah. Sorry, and I will stop there. Thanks. Yes.
And then what is the
statement? That is the
no, it's the same homology of the skill that's can be just
yeah, yeah, yeah. And it was already conjectured that cohomology of this Hilbert scheme
is what?
This is what's called the bottom row, the A to the zero row of Homsley. Like conjectured and heavily checked.
Homology is what is triply graded, right?
Is Homsley homology is triply graded. I've killed one of the gratings by saying it's the degree zero part for the A grading.
And so the
Q degree is connected component. It's D.
Okay.
And homological degree is homological degree.
And then on the right is not a degree which is not visible here, but you probably have some.
Yeah, no, they're all here. Oh, I'm sorry. So you want higher A. So that's the paraheoric modification of this. So on the Springer fiber side, the map doesn't go from Taylor series into Laurent series. It goes from that modified form of the matrices where they have a block form with poles or zeros, and we mod by the paraheoric. On the Hilbert scheme side, it's a flag, exactly. It's a flag Hilbert scheme.
How does it produce high degrees in A?
It's labeled by an integer K. And so the vortex sort of k modification corresponds to a to the k.
So can you repeat this? So well, what's the number k? So I understand I can say this whole thing, same story for a for example.
Yeah, so it's
in the Gorse picture, it's the wedge power.
Oh, I see. So it's not arbitrary for a for example, but just this
one. It's this one. Yes, exactly. It's a sort of a two block.
And what happens if you see the other parameters?
I think the Iwahori version of this, where both the matter and the gauge, where the gauge group is broken, but also the matter is forced to have zeros or poles in the Iwahori, I think that that has to do with the Porcesi bundle.
Yeah. And there's one line that gives you a whole Porcesi bundle.
Yeah, and
you use the Lie algebra of the
Iwahori
and break symmetry to the Iwahori, that gives you the Porcesi bundle.
And then I think you can recover everything else from that.
Sure.
If you use the Porcesi bundle here, this actually tells you how to produce a sheaf on, how to produce a coherent sheaf on the Coulomb branch.
But this might be a gradient line.
So this component has an action. So this Coulomb branch algebra.
Absolutely.
So what would that be expected from the Coulomb perspective?
It's expected from like all the other mathematical categorifications of Homfli, yes.
Representations in the Schrödinger algebra.
Yeah.
So Homfli is supposed to give you all n Jones polynomials as you n.
Yes.
How do I special?
Sorry, that's a great question. I think intuitive answer is I think you mass out the bulk. And like the finite n categorifications should just come from the boundary condition. But that's also a little oversimplified. Like in work of Kautis, Kaminter, Licata, it's not really just T star flag, it's a bunch of different varieties that come together. So the full answer is I don't know. It's waiting to be like, there's some differential that's usually turned on in Homfli homology, and that should have a really natural interpretation in the setup, and I just don't know what it is yet.
So if you change the bulk theory, do you still expect to get not homology because all the gradient action takes place on the boundary only?
You will always get an invariant of braid closures. The special thing that's happening here is, well, there are two special things. First, naively in this setup, it's not obvious that these parameters are allowed to be zero. And so naively, it looks like you have braids not in C, but in C star. But in fact, by analyzing the Coulomb branch of this theory, you see that you can actually go through zero and that's smooth, but that's a property of the bulk. So the bulk makes zero a smooth point. The other thing that's special about this whole setup is that you have Markov too, which means if we had a braid on n strands and crossed the last two, and closed, and then there's some braiding happening there. We close everything else. This should be the same as a braid on n minus one strands, where you just undo that final twist. And going from n to n minus one is a super non-trivial operation here. It's a very non-local operation, and it's not obvious. Like it's. It seems special that with this particular choice of bulk and boundary, it holds, but it might not always.
So, you know, when I think about cough of T star of the flag variety, I would tend to think of that as itself the
Coulomb branch of a three-dimensional gauge theory coming from a different quarter.
True.
Is that like a weird coincidence, or?
This is very slightly broken from theories with twice the supersymmetry and reduced from four dimensions. So it's not really a coincidence. This is, and there's a version of this. So if we didn't include on the B side, if we didn't have that fundamental representation, then we would be getting affine braids. Braids in C star, and everything would have twice the supersymmetry and could be reduced from four dimensions. It's the fact that it's very slightly deformed from that.
Yeah, I mean, right, when you think about it that way, you see the affine brain group, not just the normal.
And here it's obvious that you get affine brains if you do that. What happens if you do that modification and remove the fundamental on the B side? On the A side, you have the fundamental, but the matter is no longer linear. The matter is in T star of the group. And then it's clear that the eigenvalues can't actually be zero. That the what?
Well, this knowledge should be this partially interpreted as something, so sorry about kind of should be wrong with that. I mean, the sort of, something about D models on that I'm right.
So yeah, so. Sorry, so the most obvious way to do that is in the category of A-type line operators.
Okay.
So let me just write that down. So lines, bulk lines in the A-twist, is D-modules on GLn of k times Cn of k mod GLn of k. With support conditions that are complicated. And we have two objects in this category. The vortex line defines one object. Let me just say the identity line first. If we're doing the bottom row of knot homology, there's no vortex line, it's just the identity. This is the structure sheaf of Taylor series.
In both variables.
Yes. Mod. Oh, it's contractible things. And it's clear what to do for other vortex lines, for other A degrees. We modify this to the appropriate parahoric version.
Okay.
And the braid, the boundary condition.
What if I only the group by which we take the quotient, or also whose structure should I take? Would you take the structure of the corresponding group? I mean, like.
What?
I mean, you're writing O, yeah. GL, and O.
I mean.
You have to modify O. You have to modify O. Okay.
Yes.
Yeah, okay, fine.
You have to mod. Yes, sorry. I, as Justin says. So the boundary condition, this wrapped thing corresponding to an algebraic knot, is the structure sheaf of gamma.
So
gamma is in GLN of K. I mean, it's GLN of polynomials, but in particular, it's in GLN of K. And then we just take the constant vector. So that's just a point.
I think it's orbit on GLN of K.
If you, yes, exactly. So we can smear it and make it equivariant. That's what having Dirichlet boundary condition means. That.
And then I'm claiming that so if you consider this
yes. Point, and I'm saying
down should be the same as that.
By yes, in a very straightforward way.
Prove this fact.
Yes, right. Am I being too naive?
I mean, assuming that like the normal Ginsburg-Kress isomorphism between like isomorphism.
Because we're behind, rather, because you need categories here, not.
In the same way that the BFN construction comes from self x of one, to the extent that you believe that, then.
Yes, I understand, but somehow I was thinking of that.
I don't think this was the question he was asking. I think he was trying.
No, I mean, what I was asking was that.
It's not D modules on the FN flag variety, but. Sort of close.
B0, that's really sort of, you know, for example, if you combine it with self x, this is really the same as self x or something on the bank normal. This,
Yeah.
I got the answer.
Okay.
So if tau is not algebraic, does a beta exist, which is an algebraic description?
This is not clear. So you might hope that by going from polynomials to Laurent series, you gain some more freedom.
It's probably related to my question because somehow it's that I mean the whole point is that, for example, let's start just D models on the fine black variety, you have ordered random models on the fine black. This thing is a critical application. You have like objects that are just one to any.